हरिः ॐ
सहनावतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः ॐ जय श्रीकृष्ण चैतन्य प्रभु नित्यानन्द श्री अद्वैत गदाधर शिव सरि गौर भक्तवृन्द हरे कृष्ण 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 हरे 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 राम 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 हरे हरे
ओके पेज 41 Okay, let's go back to here. Now an alternative interpretation of Vedanta Sutra 115 will be discussed. Here someone may protest. In Katha Upanishad 1.3.15 it is said, the Supreme is aloof from all sound and touch. He has no form. He is eternal and unchanging. If this is so, how can the Supreme be the author of the Vedas? To this protest, the following reply is given. It is not true that the Supreme is aloof from all sound and other objects of sense perception. For example, in the Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3, it is said, then the Supreme glanced at the material energy. He thought, let me become many. I will father many children. Here it is said that the Supreme can see, so it is not unreasonable to assume that he can also hear. Therefore, he's not aloof from sound and other objects of sense perception. Right? Because the idea is that it says that, so that what the scripture says must be correct. Right? It says he's aloof from all sound and touch. He has no form. It has to be correct. But in which context? That's the whole point. Now, if that's all the verses ever say, then we would take it, yes, then the impersonal is the position. But because it has these aspects and it has other aspects where he says he hears and touches, and sees. So, then that means what? That means that both must be correct. Because the Shastra is always correct, and it's not contradictory. So, that means what context does that all go together? What context does that match? So that means he must not see, and that like we do with our attachments and our illusion and that. He must see beyond that. Right? So his position, the transcendental position, that would be the point. So then, what he does is transcendental. What we do is mundane. He doesn't do that. Does that make sense? Yeah. You know, it's like saying, you know, we don't eat garbage. You know, so therefore we don't eat. Right? Does that make sense? No, the point is yes, we don't eat certain things, but other things we're eating. Okay. So, this is explained by the word abhigya. He is conscious of all manifestations. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111, therefore, as Chandogya Upanishad 6.2.3 explains, the Supreme is conscious of all sounds and all other sense objects. Still, these powers of the Lord are not at all material, for the Lord is perfectly spiritual in nature. He existed before the material world was even manifested. The nature of the Lord is then explained in the word Swarat. He is independent. In Srimad Bhagavatam 111. In this way, as already been explained in this book, it is proved that the Supreme Lord has a form, that is his nature. This is also affirmed by the author of the Vedanta Sutra in these words. 1.1.20 Atastad dharmopade shata. Oh, antastad. The person within the sun and the eye is the Supreme Personality of Godhead. Because the Vedic literature explained that his nature fits the description of the Lord. Therefore, when the scriptures say the Supreme is aloof from sound and other sense objects, it means that his sense powers are not material. Right? Because He is the sun, so therefore by light you can see, because the process of seeing happens when there's light. When there's no light, you can't see. Right? So it's a process of it's connected with fire. Right? At the same time, is he's within the eye. So the potency that we can see with our eye, that's the Lord. Right? Does that make sense? Yeah, because how you say, what would you say? The, you know, what is commonly done, what's commonly approved?
Convention?
The convention, yes. According to the convention, when you mention something that you are spying it with your little eye, not with your big, fat, unlimited, sees everything eye, right? You understand? That's the Lord.
Okay. Technically, he's not spying.
No. Because he's seeing it all. We're the one that's spying. Yeah, okay. So that's the whole point, is that he is within the eye. It's his potency of seeing, because he sees, we see. Right? Does that make sense? Because he sees, we see. That's the whole point. He's within the eye.
So we can't hide.
No, that's the point. We may be spying, but we can't hide. He sees all the things. So that means he's not material. He has to be on the spiritual platform, because he's what's beyond, because it mentioned he's there before it happened. So that means he's seeing and touching all these things before. Then his potency is being applied here. Right? So then so that's the point. It's another point, then, how can that be? How can he be transcendental, dealing with material? That's a transformation of energies. That's a point, you know? Yeah, yes.
Just an aside, he sees with the big eye, and yet in Dwarka he likes to sometimes dress himself up and go out and spy on us.
Yes. No, that's because that's the duties of the king, right? One of the duties of the king is that, see, he has spies, so he's getting his information regularly. But at the same time, is he must not just depend on that, because the king is independent. So if he's dependent upon his spies, and then it's their interpretation, right? Because unless they're, you know, somebody, it's transcendental, and generally they're not the ones that are spying, right? Because somebody who's a transcendental, you'd notice them in the crowd, right? So that's the point, is that people who you don't notice because they're so ordinary, they're spies. But because they're ordinary, then they have the four defects. Right? So then it's a whole complexity of how they deal with spies to find out if what they're saying is correct. So one of the things that they do is go out themselves. So that's one of the 64 arts, is to be able to dress yourself up in a way that even your friends can't tell who you are. It's one of the 64 arts. So, you know, for in general use, it's for fun, but also in practical, the king uses that. That's how he can get around and not be seen. So, in this way, the first four sutras of Vedanta are explained by the first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam. Vedanta Sutra 114 explained by the words Anvayad Itaratascha, 32 footnote. The first chapter of the Brahma Sutra shows that the consistent purport of the Vedantic text is Brahman. The phrase Anvayad Itaratascha names Anvaya and Vyatireka as the means of reaching this harmonious conclusion. Like that. It would probably be good in these to put in brackets afterwards what the Sanskrit words mean.
Oh, okay, true.
Yes.
This is just positive and negative concomitant.
Yeah, but still, it's good to put that in, because you move on. Sometimes you remember, sometimes you don't.
Sure.
You know. So at the time, it makes a lot of sense, but then we moved on to the next verse. It's a whole different world. Right? So, can't remember.
Yes,
you know, it's like let alone can't remember what you had for lunch yesterday. You're not even sure if you had lunch yesterday.
I'm pretty consistent on that one. Uh-huh. Having lunch.
Yeah. Okay. So you don't have to worry about that. He's stable. Fixed, okay.
Yeah.
Nishta.
Shouldn't eat too little, shouldn't eat too much. I focus these days most on not eating too little.
Okay. Yeah, she should take some part of this sadhana and focus on it. Okay. The Avirodha portion of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the words Munyanti Yatsuraya.
What's Avirodha?
Avirodha.
Avirodha. Oh, that means it's against the conclusion, or it's arguing.
Not opposing.
Yeah,
opposite.
Opposing. Yeah.
Not opposing.
Not opposing. No conflict.
No conflict. No conflict.
Okay.
Viroda is.
Yeah, Viroda is conflict. Yes.
Oh, okay. In the first, okay, that's footnote 33. The second chapter, Avirodha, or non-conflicts, deals with possible objections to Vedanta metaphysics. The phrase Muhyanti Yatsuraya makes it clear that objections arise simply from the fact that everyone, including the ever-liberated souls, is bewildered about Brahman. The sadhana portion of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the words Dhimahi in Srimad Bhagavatam 111. Footnote 34. The third chapter of the Brahma Sutra discusses the means of attaining moksha. The Bhagavat specifies this as meditation. And the phala portion of Vedanta Sutra is explained by the words Satyam Param in Srimad Bhagavatam 111, footnote 35. Satyam Param specifies the goal or results phala of meditation, namely attaining the supreme truth. Okay, so then basically you're establishing the Sambandha Abhyadeya and Prayojana. You have the Supreme Lord, and then you have that's the position, and that everything is reconciled in the Lord, everything's about the Lord. He is the source of everything, so there can't be any conflict. Then it's through meditation or absorption in the Lord, we will then attain to this transcendental position, and then by coming to that, by that meditation, we attain the goal, which is to be situated on the transcendental position. Does that make sense? Right. So that's the that's then established in these first four verses. Right. So the overall Vedanta Sutras in Sambandha Abhyadeya and Prayojana, and here again we see even just within those first four Sambandha Abhyadeya and Prayojana.
Right. In the first one.
The first syllable. The first verse of Srimad Bhagavatam also explains the meaning of the Gayatri Mantra. The syllable Om in the Gayatri Mantra is explained by the word Janmadyasya Yataha in the Srimad Bhagavatam 111. For Om describes the Lord's power to create, maintain, and annihilate the material universes. Paramatma Sandarbha 105, 113 through 117. Okay. So, Tato Brahma Jigyasa, we're inquiring about the Supreme. That's the actual purpose. Having seen the futility of material activity, we see that there must be something beyond. So, therefore, now is someone with that mentality. Now is the time to inquire about the Supreme. Right? Janmadyasya yataha, everything is coming from the Lord, right? Because you have to establish his position. And then the next will be you establish that everything is coming from him. He is everything. Right? So the two have no contradiction in that if Brahman is the existence, that means everything that exists is also Brahman. But it's a different flavor because one is you're just establishing that this is the fact, this is the position. The other is whatever there is, it is the Lord. Right? So it's kind of looking at it, everything's within him and he is within everything. Right? Does that make sense? Then, Shastra Yonitvat, then through the Shastra, then he will be revealed. Right? That's the only way to know him. Even though he is everything, we still can't know him other than through the scriptures. Then Tattu Samanvayat. Then that's the one. We're on Ikshater, right? Tattu Samanvayat. What was that? All I remember is but.
No conflict. contradiction.
Okay, yes, there's no contradiction.
The scriptures are for the purpose of...
Yes. Okay, yes, yes. So, it's not that whatever they're describing is only the Lord. There isn't something else. That's the position. And so then from that we also get the aspect of, since everything's describing him, that means all of the things that we're thinking about, since we're taking everything from Shastra, we're absorbing ourselves in Brahman, that means we'll be meditating upon the Supreme. Right? Does that make sense? So that's the point we're trying to come to. So we see it goes along the... Yeah. So you're also then explaining also the four, the Chaturshloki, right? Because he is Brahman, he is everything. Then from that position, he is everything. Means he is the existence. So everything's within him. Then he is within everything. So whatever it is of value to you, that's actually the Lord. Right? Then how are you going to get to that position? By always meditating upon the Lord. And the same time as the Lord is beyond all this, that he is the origin and the purpose of why you come on that. You know, that means he is the transcendental position. Does that make sense? Just it switches the order, that's all. It puts the third and fourth, because the Bhagavatam is going through how we'll think. Right? We'll go Sambandha Prayojana, then Abhideya. Well, the Vedanta, because it's Nyaya Prashtan, it'll be Sambandha Abhideya Prayojana. Is that? Bhagavatam verses. Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31. Jnanam param guhyam me tad vijnana samanvitam sahasa sarahasyam tarangam cha grihana garitam maya. The personality of Godhead said, knowledge about me as described in the scriptures is very confidential, and it has to be revealed in conjunction with devotional service. The necessary paraphernalia for that process is being explained by me. You may take it up carefully. Okay, footnote 36. This verse immediately precedes the Chaturshloki Bhagavatam. Srila Prabhupada comments as follows. Lord Brahma is the topmost devotee of the Lord within the universe, and therefore the personality of Godhead replied to his four principal inquirers in four important statements, which are known as the original Bhagavatam in four verses. These were Brahma's questions. What are the forms of the Lord, both in matter and in transcendence? 2. How are the different energies of the Lord working? 3. How does the Lord play with his different energies? 4. How may Brahma be instructed to discharge the duty entrusted to him? The prelude to the answers is this verse under discussion, wherein the Lord informs Brahma that knowledge of him, the Supreme Absolute Truth, as it is stated in the revealed scriptures, is very subtle and cannot be understood unless one is self-realized by the grace of the Lord. The Lord says that Brahma may take the answers as he explains them. This means that transcendental knowledge of the Absolute Supreme Being can be known if it is made known by the Lord himself. By the mental speculation of the greatest mundane thinkers, the absolute truth cannot be understood. The mental speculators can reach up to the standard of impersonal Brahman realization, but factually, complete knowledge of transcendence is beyond the knowing of impersonal Brahman. Thus it is called the supreme confidential wisdom, Srimad Bhagavatam 2.9.31, purport. So what are the forms of the Lord both in matter and transcendence? So that means, what's his position? That's the point. But then, the thing is, okay, and then how? And what are the different energies of the Lord? So he has his forms, he has his energies, right? Then the next thing is going to be what he does with them, the pastimes. Right? Does that make sense? And then the point is how may we then be engaged in devotional service? How can we be absorbed in the Lord? Right? Does that make sense? So, yes. So this gives the first, second, and third, I mean, all the verses there. So how he is everything, but then also his forms, that's the existence position. Then his energy is how he does in his pastime. So we're also talking here the aspects, we're looking at the mechanics of jnana, kriya, and icha. Mm-hmm. Right? So he is everything. So that's the mechanics of everything. But how is that done? Through his energies. So that's the kriya. Mm-hmm. Right? But why is it done? Because of icha. Right? So that's why icha then is beyond jnana and kriya. They're in support of. Right? They'll always be secondary. While the icha will always be primary. Mm-hmm. Yes.
I'm sorry, I don't know what icha means.
Icha means desire. Like that. So, okay. So then how is that obtained? By always being absorbed in the Lord. Right? By understanding all of these. The direct means the icha. The indirect means the jnana and kriya. Right? The forms, the actions, the energies, their interactions, even though we'll say that's the most important, that's actually the secondary. The important is the desire. Does that make sense? That's actually the position. Right? We, with sophistication, make it the other way, but actually that's not the natural position. Right? You look at children, what is it about? It's about just, you know, that the desire to be together, to do things. But what you're doing doesn't actually matter. It's secondary. You can do this, you can do that, you can be anything. Does that make sense? So that's the natural position. Then with time, they learn to become sophisticated and make the secondary more important than the primary, right? So much better adults, right? They're just so much better at them. Yeah? So that's the whole point, is that it's naturally on the personal. It's naturally about what's the mood and desire. Right? Does that make sense? And so, yeah. And then the symptoms of that are the qualities. Then there's the action. Does that make sense? You know, it's just like somebody's, upset and doing upset stuff. Right? So the child will ask, why are they upset? Or why are they sad? The adult will say, why are they throwing things around? Yes. So the adults have trained themselves to the point where they train out actually the personal part. Mm-hmm. Right? And that's called sophisticated. Mm-hmm. You're not a child anymore. You don't actually want anything of value. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? Yeah. Okay. And so, is this like an explanation of that first verse here?
The voice?
Yes. the Brahman. Tato Brahma Jigyasa. Or you just throw this in for the pleasure of the
extra
students?
Extra notes, because there's so much.
Oh, I see. Okay, okay. Okay. Oh, I see. This is the transcendental, the tripada.
Oh.
Oh, that was the end of the... Okay, so Adhikarana 5.2. Summary. The absolute truth, the self of all, is not Saguna Brahman, Prakriti in the mode of goodness. Sutra reference 116. Verse reference 1.2.11 and 4.3.23. Right? Because then from Ikshatera Nashabdam up to what's ever before Anandamaya Vyasat, that's all one Adhikarana. So it means the first four, one sutra was a full Adhikarana. It had all the five aspects of the logical, syllogism. Right? But these next ones, then 5 through 11, then they are considered one. So they take their steps within it. Mm-hmm. Does that make sense? So that's why it's 5.2.
So we count according to Adhikarana.
Yes, this is all organized according to Adhikarana.
And that's how the
Vidyabhusha.
No, I'm just saying.
Oh, yeah.
He doesn't make that those numbers specifically.
He doesn't put it in the numbers.
We're using the subgroupings just to organize it.
Adhikarana. Adhikaranas, yeah, that is standard, right?
Yeah, that's blended distribution.
Yeah, the adhikaranas. We're just saying 5.2 so we know where we are.
Yes.
Okay. So this one is the... This is gunaschen, not mashabda. What is it? Gonas chen not mashabdat. Okay. Interesting. He's looking at it, I couldn't read it, but I know it, but I can't. That's the funny part. Right? The two don't seem to match. Okay. Summary. Vishaya. That Brahman can, to some extent, be described with words does not contradict the fact that Brahman reveals himself by his own wish. Right? Because we're saying if he's transcendental, he can't be described with words. So we're saying he can be described with words. Then what about the self-revelation? Mm-hmm. Right? It means the Lord reveals himself, not that we do it. So they're not contradictory either. Right? So that's the next point to establish. The Vedas are actually the incarnation of Brahman, and therefore Brahman may reveal himself in the words of the Vedas. Right? Since the Veda is the Lord, then he can reveal himself through the Veda because he is that. Right? Okay. Shamshaya. This may be so, but still... Oh, we throw in more. They're getting fancier now. But still... The Supreme Person described in the words of the Vedas referred to Saguna Brahman, a manifestation of the word, the Lord, according to the modes of material nature, and not the perfect, complete, and pure original Brahman, who remains indescribable by words, right? Even though they did use words, and they used a lot of adjectives, which then show the energies of the Lord, right? If he's non-dual, then how he has perfect, he has complete, he has pure, he has original...
Mm-hmm. Right. But where did they get this idea from? That the Supreme Lord described in the words of the Vedas refer to Saguna?
Could say from our good old friend Maya. See, is that there's the ideas that means this will be the thought that if the Lord is transcendental, right? Because that's accepted. But what we see here is material, right? And so here, what we see has forms, has activities, has results, has interactions, emotions, feelings, you know, on and on. So since the Lord is transcendent, so this is mundane. So that means the Lord who's transcendental can't have any of that. No form, no shape, no nothing. Right? So... Then, but we see is that Vishnu's talked about, he's the supreme. You know, he's the origin of all these different things. He's the creator, maintainer, and destroyer. So, since transformation must be mundane in this way of thinking, right? Then that means, then Vishnu must be mundane. But, because he's the supreme, he has to be on that topmost platform of goodness of goodness.
What?
He has to be on the platform of goodness, right? So that means he has to be the top. So therefore, Vishnu, you know, Pradhan, like this all has to be on that topmost platform of goodness. So that's why then he will say he's manifest according to the modes of nature. So he will be the topmost or the most perfect manifestation of the mode of goodness. That's how they explain it.
Material.
Yes, but still material. That's why then... Their idea is that if you want to get to the transcendental, you have to give this up. So you meditate upon this form to get you to that position of focus, but then once you are comfortable, then you throw that away and then you meditate on, you become that nothing. Right? Does that make sense? You know, it's like, probably gives the example of, what is it? He was... They were going down from the road down. I don't know if they're going down to the Ganga or what they were going, but they were going. The road was high and then it drops down. If you notice on the west of the Bhaktisiddhanta Road, then it dips down wherever, if you can ever find a place where there's nothing built, right? So they were going down that way, and then Prabhupada's going down, so he I think, took some one devotee's arm. And then, you know, they were having, because when they're on the morning walks, they discuss all the philosophy and all that, so they must have been discussing this. Then they're going down, and as soon as he gets to the bottom where things are stable again, he very strong pushes that devotee away. So the devotee's freaking out, they're all freaking out, who did wrong, this and that, and you know, in their confusion, then Prabhupada says, this is the Mayavadis. Right? They take benefit from the guru, they take benefit from everything, and then when they so-called attain perfection, they kick it all away, because now they're... So that's you know, so even though they're talking about so nice, the ego is so great that they become, not only do they become the guru, they become God. Mm-hmm. So you take advantage of all this so-called manifestations of Maya, you know, but then you become God. Mm-hmm. So that's why they're impersonal, not only, means by etiquette, then they'll follow things nicely, but it's very dry. Like that. Because it's only because of the rules you're supposed to follow it. Because like, you're supposed to use the mode of goodness to get to that platform of pure goodness, that Vasudeva Sattva. But they don't actually understand that the relationships and the souls and the Lord are eternal. They don't catch that. Yeah.
Even if you follow Panchopasana, so within that, yes. Vishnu is the highest form of the material energy within.
Yes. So that, you know, Vishnu will be. That's why we say there are smartas who are they worship Vishnu, but it's Vishnu in the mode of goodness. But they'll call themselves Vaishnavas, and they'll follow what are the recommendations in shastras for worshiping Vishnu, which will be the same things that we use. Right? And so their lifestyle, what they do, and everything, then is like devotees, but they're not. That's why it mentions if you take initiation from such people, even though you'll follow your standard Vaishnav principles of initiation, you're technically not initiated because they're not spiritual. That's why then in that case you get reinitiated. It means you use that same ritual again, but you're not technically reinitiated because you were never initiated in the first place. Is that something? Yeah. So, but at the same time, the advantage for them is because they follow the Vaishnav principles, if they actually come in contact with actual Vaishnavs, then they will, you know, invite them over, they'll feed them, they're happy with the kirtans, the discussions about the Lord. The difference is now they're hearing it on the platform, the chit potency. So now they'll actually come in contact with Krishna consciousness, they could switch from that position of a smarta into Vaishnav. Does that make sense? Yeah.
There's a grammatical sutra where Jiva Goswami, Vishnudasa Harivatrani Vaishnavada, which explains some different elements in the alphabet, but also is the servant of the Lord who's initiated in the disciple succession, that's a Vaishnava.
Yes. Okay. Yeah, very good. Okay. Then Siddhanta, if this doubt were to arise, Srila Vyasadeva would answer it in the following sutra, Gaunas Chen Nat Mashabdata. If you argue that Brahman described by words is Brahman covered by material gunas, the answer is no, because the text mentions the word Atma in relation to Brahman. Right, so it means the transcendental position is there. Okay, did we miss some footnotes? No, there's just one. Sri Govinda Bhashya, Shamsaya. So this will be the doubt then again to the Siddhanta, or it's just continuing from the previous?
No, this doesn't include the summary. This is the previous.
This is the previous.
Continuation from the previous.
From two. Bhashya. Okay. Shamsaya. Let that be. But the Brahman describable by words that you mention is the Saguna Brahman. Brahman covered by material gunas or material shakti. Right? Because they're saying if there's qualities, it can't be the original. That's their concept. Because they don't understand saguna brahman. They just take it, gunas means material. So they can't understand the material energy is also brahman. It's just an inferior form of brahman, but it's brahman nonetheless. For them, only the Brahma Jyoti is brahman. Everything else is illusion. Mm-hmm. Right? So that's why they're called Mayavadis, because everything's Maya.
That makes them dualists.
Yeah, technically. Yeah, because there's the Brahman, and there is
the gunas.
The gunas. Yeah. So technically they are dualists. So only the Vaishnavas are actual non-dualists. Yes.
This is their perception of Brahman, and it's a really lousy perception for explaining why the creation exists.
They don't have that. They don't bother with those, because why? What's their point? Their point is they're just continuing, I'm the controller and enjoyer, but they've given up the pursuit that I can control and enjoy on the sensual platform and become rich and famous and powerful and all that. That's failed, and that's the, you know, it's not working. So now they're just going to become God directly.
You know. Called sour grapes.
Yeah, the sour grapes. Sour grapes philosophy. So when it gets up to these fine points here, they don't have answers. They'll have some ways to, what do you call it? I think the technical term is they'll use jalpa and they'll use chala. Jalpa just means saying anything to distract your attention, and chala means you give a different interpretation of the word. You like a word has synonyms, so you give a different synonym that takes it into a different context, and that context they can more easily deal with, so then they'll start talking philosophy. So they're just very clever at switching the contexts. You know, so the green bird and the green tree, right? It's all one. No, there's a tree and there's a bird. They both happen to be green, but there's two. Right? But they just, see, it's one. So then they'll go off on their oneness. So what they have a lot of these little things like this to, as soon as you catch the point in their philosophy that actually doesn't make any sense, they have these little phrases that to the mind sound okay, and then they start talking their philosophy. Because their whole purpose is simply to establish that they're God. That's all. They don't have anything else. So, therefore, logic goes up to a point and then stops, like any material concept. Right? It means you want something, okay, have to have, you know, something. You have to have your new Ferrari, right? And so, therefore, but the point is it logic goes up to a point. Oh, it'd be good for this, that, this, that. The other thing is you can't drive it down most of the streets. You know, this and that. You know, so many things. You can't put any groceries in it. You know, there's so many points you can make. But the logic stops there. It doesn't accept that. So whatever it is that you desire on the material platform, logic will work only up to the point of gaining it. But why you should have it, if you actually need it, that the logic won't work. So Mayavadis are no different. Just that they have nothing better to do, so they think of more reasons why what they're doing is okay. Like that. So that's why they're more, in one sense you could say, more clever than the materialists when it comes to argumentation, because they don't have anything else to think about. Yes?
So when arguing this philosophy, we should always argue on the premise, not the actual arguments there.
No. Yeah, you have to go back to the premise, because they don't have anything for that. Because it's just like the Prabhupada, the Christians, thou shalt not kill.
Yeah.
They'll immediately you bring it right back. Mm. But unfortunately, the intellectuals, they really don't appreciate that you stick to one point, because mental speculation means you have the freedom to move about. So when you stick to one point and try to finish that point, they feel so uncomfortable because their freedom is being, stifled, yes.
And I also might say it's your simpleton, too.
It depends upon how much force you put.
Yeah.
But the thing is, yes, they might, they could use that. The point is that, yes, anything they'll use to shift it, because their whole point is mental speculation. It's not about getting to truth. It's just that if you use truth, then you can play around with things that people don't play around with. But if you play around with things that they don't play around with, they get highly uncomfortable. Right? So that's the point. The jnani, what's sacrosanct to him, is not to the karmi. And what's sacrosanct to the karmi is not to the jnani. but because he's using the intellectual method, the jnani will feel himself superior. So the jnani is blowing open all these, you know, mundane notions and all that, but why is he doing it? You know? Yeah, it's just like the journalist, you know, all the, you know, the how you say, what would you say? Mercantilization of everything?
Commercialization.
of everything and this and that, and it's not real and it's not this and that, and you know, they can come up with so many things, and you know, $700 billion industry, blah blah blah, on and on and on, but why are they writing the article? So they can get paid. Yeah, so that's the whole point, is that, but you can't bring that up as, you know, no, it's about the truth. And it says, what's the truth? You're getting paid to write that, and only if your editor likes what you wrote. So what has it got to do with truth? He's got to like it. It's got to fly in the magazine. It has to follow the mood of the magazine and bring out that kind of flavor. And if it doesn't, it doesn't fly. So what if you find whatever it is not truth? They're not going to publish it. You know what I'm saying? So that's the thing, is if you go into there, then what do you think? You're breaking down the whole point of journalism. You know? But, you know, they will happily break down, you know, the karmis, you know, kind of world. But you can't touch theirs. You know, but the karmis, they break down theirs, and oh, they'll just, you know, that's just the opinion, and then go on. So the two don't get along.
Like Arthur will use arguments from karma.
Yes.
Not actually be karmic.
No, of course not.
Yeah.
You know, like the same person who doesn't have any faith in the Vedic, how you say, culture, then when it's advantageous for them, for their moralism, that there's something in the scriptures that say this point, then they'll be quoting that. But if you quote something else that they're doing, oh, we don't care, we're transcendental. So that's the whole point, is that This logic doesn't work because there's an ulterior motive. The ulterior motive in this case is so-called truth, just pranamoyic facts. Because things will go on better that way. But what they don't catch is, if it's all about everybody getting along and that, wouldn't it be better that there's a monster industry that everybody's taking part in? You know?
Mm.
Like that. You know, because it's good for the economy, right? Mother's Day is good for the economy. Right, the amount of flour. I think most flowers at any time in the year are bought and sold on that day. Right? So it's good. It helps the economy. It's good. You know? So then that's how they're able to be paid, right? But at the same time, so that's what's inconsistent about the whole thing. Only Krishna consciousness, you can balance the whole thing. Does that make sense?
Yeah. So, how can we understand that Noah?
Noah.
The object and the person Noah.
Noah and Noe. Because, see, this point is that all the animals go in pairs, so Noah also has to be in a pair. So Noah and Noe, they have to go together. If just Noah goes himself, then we'll have lions and tigers and bears, but there won't be no humans.
That actually makes sense.
Where does the know, the Nari, and knowledge? So what is that third one?
Noah?
Noah.
Noah. Okay, sorry. It's just because you're far away in the fan, I only heard Noah. And I thought you were talking about Noah and his ark, you know, like that.
Noah. The object.
The knower.
Knows the
okay,
yeah.
And then
the object
itself,
the process of knowing,
and the process of knowing,
is one. Yeah.
Okay.
How can we understand that aspect of?
Because if it's not one, how would it work?
Means usually, like in modern platform, the knower and object is different. Means.
Yes, but the point is if there's not something common, how would they have any connection?
That means on transcendental platform, the knower and object becomes one.
Yes, but how do they become one? See, this is where you have to. This the same logic that we can't see is the same that then we make the opposite. Right? We're looking at it. There's two, so how can they be one? And so then if it is one on the transcendental platform, that means then they have to be one thing. There can't be two. You understand? So it's the same fault. We can't see two, we can't understand one. If you understand the one in this side, then you can understand the two in that side. But if you can't understand the one here, you can't understand the two there. Does that make sense? Point is why do things work? You understand? Something works because there's something common. Right? So that commonness is what is the interactive element. So the eyes can see forms. Forms come from fire. And the eyes work by fire. Right? But still, the point is it's the seeing part that is the common. Right? That's the original. Seeing is first. Then to see, there is the eye, and then things to see. Right? There's form. So, does that make sense? So from seeing comes form and fire. So they go. Their origin is there. If we understand that, then it works. So it just means here, where the seer and the seen is made of inferior ingredients, and in the spiritual world are made for superior ingredients. You know, it's like going into the diner, and the food there is terrible, right? And then the food being terrible, then we have the idea that, therefore, you know, good food can't have that shape or form or taste. But it's actually no. The good food's better ingredients, prepared properly, everything like that. It's the same thing. It's just better ingredients, better consciousness. Less flies. Does that make sense? Doesn't make sense? Makes sense enough, we can go on? Okay. Yes.
To simplify it, Prabhupada says it's a oneness of agreement to the purpose of creation.
Oneness of agreement in the purpose of creation.
That's the oneness. The oneness isn't the oneness that one merges into the other. The oneness is the oneness of agreement and the purpose of creation.
Oh, okay. That work?
Yeah.
Okay. The Vedas conclude that Brahman is pure and complete and can be expressed only indirectly. Footnote 32nd. Right? So this is their continuing with the doubt. The Vedas conclude that Brahman is pure and complete and can be expressed only indirectly. You can't actually describe Brahman. So footnote 37. Srila Prabhupada explains the background for this doubt. All five kinds of philosophers mentioned above, Nyaya, Shankya, etc., understand that impersonal Brahman is without material qualities, and they believe that when the personality of Godhead appears, he is contaminated and covered by the material qualities. The technical term used is Saguna. They speak of Saguna Brahman and Nirguna Brahman. For them, Nirguna Brahman means the impersonal absolute truth without any material qualities. And Saguna Brahman means the absolute truth that accepts the contamination of material qualities. More or less, this kind of philosophical speculation is called Mayavad philosophy. Chaitanya Charitamrita Madhya Lila 25:56 purport. Srila Prabhupada dispels this error. Right, so, just their definition of Saguna and Nirguna. Our Saguna will be in... You know, we understand that the transcendental is full of qualities. And because of that being reflected here, or transform, there's qualities here. Just the qualities there are superior, the qualities here are inferior. Then nirguna, then means there are no qualities, right? So what we're saying is that the material actually is not qualities. The original, that's qualities. So in that way, the description is not actually different, but they can't distinguish between them. Right? We'll say nirguna is beyond the gunas here. But the point is it's beyond, and but it's the origin of all the gunas here.
Can we say that saguna and nirguna for us is actually a different perspective on the same thing?
Yes.
Whereas for them it's
two different things. Yes. Because again, back to they're not monists, they're dualists, so they may not appreciate that.
Probably not.
Yes. Yes.
Do they ever answer the question, why would the nirguna want to become saguna?
Sometimes say pastimes or something else. I think it's Vaisheshika, just it's to be able to understand the nature of pradhan or something like that, that then this consciousness comes up, so then there's a separation of it like that. So basically it's because of our interest in the knowing the material, therefore the material creation takes place. But then the only problem is when we become self-realized, does that mean the whole thing packs up and no one else is left, or we're the only soul and everybody else is an illusion, or like that? It becomes a little difficult. Yes.
I've heard them say that in order to fully appreciate the bliss of being Brahman, first you have to experience that separation from Brahman.
From Brahman.
And then Prabhupada replied to that, so in order to experience the bliss of not having your face kicked on, come here and I'll kick on your face.
Yes. Practical.
So merciful.
Yes. Very straightforward.
So the other point here is that all the six schools of philosophy are more or less Mayavada.
Are all Mayavada, yes, basically. Means they accept the supreme, the creation, the scriptures, but they base it all in scriptures. That's why they would be called, what is it, agnostic, like that. But it's not necessarily that they're technically theistic, like that. It's just that, there's a supreme, but they really don't care about the supreme. Like that, because merging in Brahman, you don't really care about Brahman. You're only caring about yourself. So. Mm-hmm.
But, you will care about him because you merge into something. You have to know what it is.
But then the problem is everybody else is merging also.
And here Maharaj says all five kinds of philosophers.
Because the sixth would be Vaishnava. In this case.
If we're all Brahman, and if one person were to merge back into Brahman, how come everybody else doesn't merge back with it?
These are the problems they have. They have problems.
In other words, that means that we're each one Brahman can merge into Brahman.
Yes.
That means.
Yeah. So that's the point. That's the point, is that it doesn't make sense.
Yeah. Everybody would be sucked into Brahman by one person.
Yeah. So since it hasn't happened, we can understand by Mayavad philosophy, no one's merged into Brahman yet. Srila Prabhupada dispels this error in Sri Isha Upanishad purport. The word saguna does not imply that when the Lord appears with perceivable qualities, he must take on a material form and be subject to the laws of material nature. For him, there is no difference between the material and spiritual energies, because he is the source of all energies. As a controller of all energies, he cannot at any time be under their influence as we are. The material energy works according to his direction. Therefore, he can use the energy for his purposes without ever being influenced by any of the qualities of that energy. In this sense, he is nirguna, without qualities. Nor does the Lord become a formless entity at any time. For ultimately, he is the eternal form, the primeval Lord. His impersonal aspect or Brahman effulgence is but the glow of his personal rays, just as the sun's rays are the glow of the sun god. Shish Upanishad 5 purport. Oh, it continues. This is a serious footnote.
Yeah, footnote like a body note.
Oh, I even like how this is like the perfection. There's the line, but there's nothing above it. Wow. That's the first time I've seen that. I'm impressed. I've seen like one sentence above it, you know, one line. Yeah. But I've never seen this is like, okay. Yeah. No, it says you definitely got to do it. The footnote award of the yes. Srila Prabhupada lists numerous other ways these terms are used in scriptures. For example, they refer to the Ekapada Vibhuti and Tripada Vibhuti. Yeah, Ekapada not meaning the ghosts. Means, yeah, well, at the same time, Ekapada means those who are here. It's like ghosts. Yeah, okay. According to the Vedic version, there is no existence beyond Brahman. Sarvam kalvidam brahma. Chandogya Upanishad 3.14.1. It is stated also in the Vishnu Purana that whatever we see is parasya brahmanashaktihi. Everything is expansion of the energy of the Supreme Absolute Truth, Brahman. When Brahman is mixed with the three qualities, goodness, passion, and ignorance, there results the material expansion, which is sometimes called Saguna Brahman, which consists of these 25 elements. In the Nirguna Brahman, there is no material contamination. Or in the spiritual world, the three gunas, modes, goodness, passion, and ignorance, are not present. Where Nirguna Brahman is found, simple unalloyed goodness prevails. Saguna Brahman is described by the Shankya system of philosophy of consisting of 25 elements, including the time factor, past, present, future, Srimad Bhagavatam 3.26.15. Okay, so here's Saguna means the material world, Nirguna means the spiritual world. Right? So that's being, so they're showing that there's that both words, it's not that, yeah, does that make sense? Mm-hmm. So except that principle is there. So they're saying that also, but they don't understand the realm beyond. They just think it's just the Brahman effulgence itself. That's been established before. Brahman effulgence, Brahman is just the effulgence of the Lord. That means he is personal. And he's unlimited. So that's the point, is God, he can do that kind of stuff. We're not, that's why it doesn't make sense to us. Right? Just like Prabhupada makes the point. Men will never understand women will never understand men. Right? So that's the principle, is Krishna's masculine, so we as feminine will never understand him. You know, we can understand enough to interact, you know, based on affection, but not enough to actually intellectually understand. Right? And Krishna comes as Lord Chaitanya to try to understand feminine nature. Yeah. That makes sense. Next, Saguna and Nirguna refer also to the Lord and the Jiva. The living entities, being contaminated by the modes of material nature, are called Saguna, whereas Paramatma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead, is Nirguna, not being under the influence of the material modes. The living entities, being encaged in material qualities, are gunashrita, whereas the Supreme Personality of Godhead is gunashraya. Srimad Bhagavatam 4.27 purport. So here's saguna means the jiva, nirguna means the Lord. Right, so here we're saying, right, we're bringing it closer because Nirguna is the Lord, that means the Lord's a person. So he can be Nirguna and be a person. Finally, Srila Prabhupada uses these two words to contrast the easy process of bhakti according to Pancharatra with the perilous Nirguna path of the jnani. Of course, worship of the Supreme Personality of Godhead in his form within the temple is not idol worship. There is evidence in the Vedic literature that worship may be saguna or nirguna, of the Supreme possessing or not possessing attributes. Worship of the deity in the temple is saguna worship, for the Lord is represented by material qualities. But the form of the Lord though represented by material qualities such as stone, wood, or oil paint, is not actually material. That is the absolute nature of the Supreme Lord. A living entity is eternally an individual soul. And if he wants to merge into the spiritual whole, he may accomplish the realization of the eternal and knowledgeable aspects of his original nature. But the blissful portion is not realized. So he can get some knowledge, right, and his existence, but he actually can't get bliss. So this idea of Brahmananda actually doesn't exist. Because on the Brahman platform, you're not accessing Ananda. So it means there's something from the neutral position. It means it's the happiness of not having the material qualities. But it's not actual real happiness or positive happiness. So, yes?
What would your guru worship be?
Like the jnanis, they just on the formless. They meditate on the formless. That's near guru.
Not worship, but just meditation.
Yes, because that's the point, is that since all forms and action are illusion, therefore then they have to just absorb themselves in nothingness. That's why we point out the Maya bodies are actually just Buddhists. Just they follow the... For religion, in other words, a Buddhist is you could say, Buddhist by philosophy and Buddhist by religion. Right? But a Mayavadi is Buddhist by philosophy, Vedic by religion. That makes sense. So they follow all the Vedic, you know, activities and things that they're supposed to do, duties and all that. They base everything on the Veda. But they're actually just espousing Buddhist philosophy. So that's if you can deal with Mayavadis, you can deal with Buddhists. So.
In some sects of Buddhism, there is puja.
Yeah, well, if you get into the tantra, then I'm not sure which you have: Hinayan, Mahayan, Vajrayan, and so depending upon what they are, they have different kind of methods. But see, it's during the time Buddhism didn't even last the full time of pure Buddhism didn't even last the full lifetime of Buddha. Within his lifetime, it had already become mixed with, you know, with Tantra, like that. You know, basically when they got to, in their preaching, when they got to Assam, I think it was at Kamakshi Temple, then the priests there impressed them with their prowess, and then these things became mixed in, you know. So that's all from there. It's not from... Okay. By the grace of some devotee, such a transcendentalist, highly learned in the process of Jnana Yoga, may come to the point of Bhakti Yoga or devotional service. At that time, long practice in impersonalism also becomes a source of trouble, because he cannot give up the idea. Just as someone who's dedicated to enjoying their senses, when they take up Krishna consciousness, that will be a trouble for them. Right? But they don't have a problem in the personal relationship with the Lord, because they're into personal relationships. It's just for sense gratification. You just have to switch this knot. So someone who's really, really well situated in jnana, then they have a problem that they can't give up the impersonal. You know, that he's a person, you interact, and all, but they can give up sense gratification here. That's not their difficulty. Being austere, being regulated, not getting involved in all kinds of stuff, they don't have any problem with that. But they just can't adopt to what's happening in the spiritual world. Well, those from the path of karma, they can very easily relate to what's in the spiritual world. They have a problem giving up here. Does that make sense? Yeah.
So which one is better?
Each has their own problem. Means, how you say, Vaishnavism is the better one. Because then you can relate to both. Means you're engaging the senses without attachment. See, they're not engaging their senses, they're unattached. Karmis are engaging their senses with attachment. So the actual perfect platform is, without attachment, engaging the senses. Because being austere is supportive of Krishna consciousness, not that that is Krishna conscious. So such a person would be judging how austere they are, that's how Krishna conscious they are. But they're missing the point, is austerity is to be engaged in Krishna service, as Narad Muni is saying. Austerity is one of the 30 qualities that someone who's going to practice Varnashram should have. Right? And so it's something that you use. Right? Means you have the knowledge and the skill. But there's also what's always left out is the attitude or the qualities. Right? People talk about, you know, the knowledge and skill, but they become dissatisfied because of lack of the quality, or if someone performs the knowledge and skill with bad qualities, then that will be pointed out. You know what I'm saying? It's just like, you know, is it constantly a minister, the prime minister in Japan, you always hear about them, they're off with some, you know, lady somewhere that they shouldn't be, and, you know, they're, you know, the couple's the whole government and everything like that. But the whole point is, what does running the government have to do with that girl? You know what I'm saying? What he does in his free time, how is that affecting the government? You understand? So that's the we get into this. As an example for something else. Yes, yes. So, because the quality is what's missing is we're thinking his with the girl is the problem. No, it's the mentality. That's the actual problem. So we expect that the government position with a certain group of qualities will be there. So that's the thing we're missing, is that in the modern, They'll always complain when qualities aren't there, but they never support the development of qualities. Right? Because, you know, religion, the secular state, all these different things, these are not good. These are where qualities are developed. They think that you'll develop qualities otherwise. You know? Like that. But the point is then, how will that be gained unless there's association? So unless there's somebody there always discussing, you know, your modern philosophies on why we should all work together and cooperate to enjoy together, then why would anybody have that? You know, saying individuals here and there have something, but does that make sense? So they've made the mistake that having the quality of austerity is devotional service. No, it's a tool to engage in devotional service. Does that make sense?
It's like you said, that they might have been very much attached.
That's another thing. That might be the reason that they find that aspect very easy.
Yeah.
You know, while someone else, you know, finds it very easy to go out and collect money and distribute books, because they can relate to that aspect. You know, if they weren't a devotee, they might be selling, you know, secondhand cars, you know, like that. So that's the point, is that may be there, but they're engaging in Krishna's service. But you have to know it's about the service. Because even you're collecting for Krishna, if you forget that it's about the service, not the money, then there'll be a problem also. You understand? So, knowledge, skills, qualities, these are all used in Krishna's service, but it has to be that the result is Krishna. That has to be foremost. We'll go, of course it's for Krishna. Let's get back down to the real, you know, adult conversation like we were discussing before. You know? That's so mature that misses the point, you know, like by 180 degrees, right? You know, in other words, kids are just a little bit off, right? You know, like that. But adults are 180 degrees off. That's what makes them so superior, right? Something's like, yeah. Okay. Therefore, an embodied soul is always in difficulty with the unmanifest, both at the time of practice and at the time of realization. Yes. So at the time of practice, it'll be a problem because they can't relate to doing things that actually need personal interaction. And at the time of realization, they have a problem because they can't. It's hard for them that Krishna is a person, he interacts, he has all these different qualities, there's all kinds of feelings and emotions. These are also a problem. So both stages, they're a problem. Right? Does that make sense? But knowledge-wise, then they don't really have much of a problem. That's the easy part for them. You know, to sit down and study all day, and they have no problem. You have devotees like that, 10 hours a day, they study straight, no problem. Like that. Every living soul is particularly independent, and one should know for certain that this unmanifested realization is against the nature of his spiritual, blissful self. One should not take up this process. For every individual living entity, the process of Krishna consciousness, which entails full engagement in devotional service, is the best way. But even Krishna recommends it last as a process of elevation. He recommends karma before jnana. Right? Means if you're talking about Vaishnavism. Mm-hmm. If you're talking about getting out of the material world, then the jnani is higher than the karmi. If you're talking about getting into the spiritual world, then the karmi has an advantage. Saying the jnani is a disadvantage. Means, in other words, karmi is already a disadvantage, and so jnani then is even more of a disadvantage. Because mm-hmm. it's a rejection of the karma. So there's an attachment to the karma, otherwise why reject it? Mm-hmm. Right? And then, at the same time, they develop an attachment to the impersonal, which then becomes a real problem. So. If one wants to ignore this devotional service, there's the danger of turning to atheism. Thus, the process of centering attention to the unmanifested, the inconceivable, which is beyond the approach of the senses, as already explained in this verse, should never be encouraged at any time. Especially in this age, it is not advised by Lord Krishna. Bhagavad Gita 12.5 purport. Yeah, so we started with it. Okay, so the path of impersonalism is never recommended. One may be inquisitive, one may use the intelligence, but the impersonal is always going to be a problem. Mm-hmm. Because the tendency is you don't want to get involved in anything. And getting involved in dynamic devotional service generally means people and trouble. Right? And so one will have a problem with that. You know, basic sadhana, one will be okay with that, but more than that will be a difficulty.
You can say any philosophical deviation will be tinged by this impersonalism. Or is there a philosophical deviation personal?
It all, because otherwise, then I'm the control. Yeah. The difference is which way are you the impersonalist? Mm-hmm. I am the controller, or I am the enjoyer. That's all. But either way, the Lord's left out of it. So they're both impersonal. That's why we're saying the two sides of the same coin. Yes.
In the impersonalist philosophy, there's this idea of merging into the supreme Brahman or the Brahman effulgence. And then there's this situation where the soul merges into the body of Krishna. And I've heard it said that out of the two types of merging, the merging into the body of Krishna into the form of the Lord is even worse.
But that's.
So what is that? I just was wondering. Yeah. First of all, is it possible to merge into the body of Krishna?
I mean, we saw Shishupal and Dantavakra, so it's not like Agasura. That they're talking about is the yogis. They're talking about the yogis. Yeah. For the yogi, he knows the Lord has a form, but he wants to merge into it. So that's a lesser position than the person who doesn't even know that there's a form. Because you've already elevated yourself to the Paramatma platform, which is higher, and then you step back to the Brahman platform. That's why it's considered lower. It's not about when Krishna kills a demon, they merge into his body. It's not about that, because the point is he is everything anyway. So even you say Brahman, it's all part of him. So generally those ones that we hear about, they merge into him and from there go to Vaikuntha.
Say that again?
They merge into the Lord, that's what you see, but they go to Vaikuntha, because he being everything, Vaikuntha is also contained within him. Yeah. So they attain Vaikuntha.
Why use that term, though, then?
Which?
If they go to Vaikuntha, why describe
it? Because that's what people see. They see the soul.
Okay, so it's just from that perspective. Okay.
Yeah. Mm. That was explained with Shishupal. Yeah. They go back to God. Okay? Okay.
I was just thinking in my mind that they go back to Godhead and then they come back as Jagai and Madai.
The point is that kind of point I wouldn't worry about,
because
that's all time and space. I wouldn't worry about that. The point is the three births, it was how long? So they attained their natural position. Now this is just to come for something extra, this is bonus. That the three lifetimes is so great. Now they get to come as Jagai and Madai. Who else could be bigger demons than them? So in Lord Chaitanya's pastimes, then Jagai and Madai are the most sinful. So, naturally they're...
Krishna was very pleased with...
So in other words, how you say, they're transcendentally typecast. it works out. Because who else will they bring in?
Om Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare. Hare Rama, Hare Rama, Rama Rama, Hare Hare.
Jai Srila Prabhupada ki.
Jai.
Samaveta Bhaktivinoda ki.
Jai.
Jai Nitai Gaura Prabhupada.